We'll have the Marshall Call Court into session.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Gaitis, Judge Clary, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is January 20, 2022. We have five cases on the calendar this morning. This is our first of five cases, A21-1266, O'Brien versus State of Minnesota. Counsel, just a few housekeeping matters before we begin. I'll ask that you mute your microphone when you're not speaking. The marshal is showing a running clock of your time. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and the appellant at your option, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. I ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. These matters are being recorded. And with that, counsel, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Daniel Gertz appearing on behalf of Mr. O'Brien. This case, as you know, arises from a probation revocation hearing. And it was one of the most extraordinary hearings that I had ever attended in my 30 years of practicing criminal law. Extraordinary in a variety of ways. One, we were on Zoom in the middle of a pandemic. But the reason we were on Zoom at this particular hearing was because there were no contested matters. It was going to be a simple admit and argue hearing, admit a technical violation of the conditions of Mr. O'Brien's probation, and then argue about what the consequence should be. And it was agreed that he was going to be going to the Hennepin County Workhouse for a period of time, months, possibly up to six. And then the question was whether he would continue to be on probation for another period of time after that. The things went awry, and at the time, it made no sense to me whatsoever, because it was clear that the matter was presented to the judge, that the hearing was now about the judge and not about Mr. O'Brien at all. That made no sense to me at the time. It makes a lot more sense with the public announcement that Judge Dimmick is running for Hennepin County Attorney. But at the time, I was astounded. The briefs do not quote the comment the judge made at the second hearing. There had to be a second hearing scheduled, an in-person hearing, because you can't take people into custody, obviously, at a Zoom hearing. And it was not anticipated that anybody would be taken into custody. So we scheduled another hearing for the next day, the 28th. At that time, I had asked for the opportunity for Mr. O'Brien to self-surrender, in as much as this was completely unexpected. And I noted that for the record. The judge pointed out, and this is where it was really clear that this was about the judge and not about Mr. O'Brien. I just can't take a chance. I don't want my face in the front page of the news, because that's what people complain about. And I know all of you in this courtroom know that. The people complain when the court lets people like Mr. O'Brien out and he goes out and he kills somebody. So what do you think is going to happen to me? And in another case, that might have been an appropriate thing to say. It certainly was not in this case. It was admitted that Mr. O'Brien suffers from alcohol use disorder, but that does not make him a danger to the public safety, a hazard of any kind whatsoever. He has been on probation, or had been at that time, for almost the entire 5 years that had been imposed. There were just a couple months left that he had to serve. At no time during those 5 years was he ever accused of anything, no allegations made whatsoever that he posed any kind of public safety risk, no allegation of any reoffense, no allegation of any drinking and driving. He's a 70-year-old man. He could not possibly pose a hazard to public safety unless, in fact, he did get into an automobile and drive it while he was intoxicated.
Counsel, can we just, I just want to steer this back to the technical violation that was admitted here. And that is that he was drinking in violation of his conditions of probation, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And there was no evidentiary hearing about whether he was actually driving. I know there was an installation of an a breathalyzer type device on the car, but there was no allegation that he was actually driving. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And the consequence that was imposed by Judge Holton Dimmick was because she believed he was driving and then was later correct, or that was corrected. Is that right?
She very clearly stated that her concern about public safety was that he's continuing to drink and drive, which there's absolutely no way. It is true. Apparently, she did not understand, at least at the time, that these ignition interlock devices are required to be for a person in Mr. O'Brien's situation to be relicensed. You have to have it installed on a vehicle and blow into it constantly over the course of 4 years to prove your sobriety.
I just want to get back to the error here, because he has violated probation 5 times during his probationary period. And he did, in fact, violate probation in this instance because he was drinking in violation of his conditions. But the argument that you're making is that the consequence that was imposed by the judge was not because of the violation that was admitted, but because of some other violation that never occurred. Is that right? Is that the argument?
That is included in the argument. The argument is that under Austin and Motlin, you have to make the three findings for the judge lawfully to revoke the probation and execute the sentence. The first two were admitted, that there was a technical violation of a condition. And when I say technical, I really mean that. There were 8 instances where 0.02. I mean, just if he had actually been lawfully licensed and driven, he would have been lawful. But it was nonetheless a violation of the no use at all condition. And he admitted that it was not an accident. He drank a beer on purpose. It's the third, and that's where the court erred here. The need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. The need that she identified for confinement was the risk to public safety. And there was no evidence of any risk to public safety. There still isn't. Her belief that he was drinking and driving is not supported by anything in the record, not alleged, just came out of no place, just out of, well, apparently her desire to show that she's tough on crime. And also this little push by, and I don't know, the completely irrelevant. The prosecution says, well, we asked, I asked probation officer why they weren't recommending execution. And they said, well, because they didn't think the court would impose it. And this just lit a fire under the judge that I saw at the time, and I was astounded by what had happened. But that's when everything went off the rails, and we came to this supposed risk to the public safety. But there was no evidence of it. And because there's no evidence of it, the third Austin finding was not met, could not have been met in this case. There was the additional concern raised after the fact that, well, Mr. O'Brien is resistant to treatment. And I think, or actually both the prosecution and probation recommended that in custody treatment would be a good option and maybe the option that that worked. And so the judge said, well, that would be an appropriate reason also for executing the sentence here. The problem is that the judge can't order him to attend treatment while he's in the custody of the DOC. She could order him to attend treatment, the Telesis treatment program they have at the Hennepin County Workhouse. And if she did, he would have. But she chose not to. So that very concern that he needs a different kind of treatment is not being met anymore, because he was up at St. Cloud. He's being transferred today, I'm given to understand. But he's not going to treatment. And there's a long waiting list, even if you want to get in. And during the pandemic, that might be a moot point anyhow. So in any case, the notion that the public taxpayer should be paying for his housing and health care of this 70-year-old man with alcohol use disorder merely because he consumed, had a technical violation of the conditions of his probation is unwarranted. That should not have happened in this case. Neither the parties were in agreement that it shouldn't happen. Probation did not recommend it. There's no question that the reason this happened had something to do with the judge wanting to make sure or wanting to show, because she was pushed on it, wanting to show that she was, in fact, willing to execute the sentence. But it's not supported by the evidence, not supported by the law. That's the error, and that's the problem in this case and why it should be overturned. At this point, I think I see that I have 5 minutes remaining, but unless there are more questions, I would just reserve my my time reserved and use that on rebuttal.
Anything else from the panel this morning? Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you.
We'll have the marshal reset the clock for you, Mr. Schmidt. Anytime you're ready. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel John Schmidt, assistant Hennepin County attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The issue before the court is, did the district court abuse its broad discretion in revoking appellant's probation? The state is asking that this court affirm. This is a situation where a different judge might have made a different decision and decided not to revoke probation, and that would not have been an abuse of discretion. The fact that this judge decided to revoke probation for a fifth probation violation does not make her decision an abuse of discretion. It is within her wide range of discretion to do exactly what she did. Now, the court made findings on each of the Austin factors and found the violation was proven, found that the violation was inexcusable and intentional, and found that the need for confinement outweighs the policies favoring probation. To the extent that, I'm sorry, Judge Cleary, it looks like you are asking a question, but you're muted.
I am muted. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. The judge put the cart before the horse. Would you agree with that?
I would,
decided yes. To revoke before she went through the factors? You would agree with that?
That's okay. Correct.
And Modlin anticipates that the factors would be listed in the record before the decision to execute probation would occur. Does it not?
It the best practice and what you should do is to go through the factors first and then note the decision.
All right. And would you agree with Mr. Gertz that the judge mistakenly thought that there was some driving behavior involved here?
She did think that. And Mr. Gertz corrected the record. And towards the end of the first hearing, the judge said, I stand corrected. And that does not change this court's decision.
Okay. All right. And then so that means that even though she didn't elucidate it, that she's finding the third factor under Austin and under Motlin. And so where is the danger to public safety in a man who has an alcohol disorder who's not driving?
Well, the factor is about the need for confinement outweighing policies favoring probation. And in this situation, she talked about his chronic alcoholism, that he's been through multiple treatments, including Hazleton and outpatient treatment. And at this point, none of that is working. And that treatment in confinement would best serve him and therefore the needs favoring probation were outweighed in favor of confinement. Now, admittedly, the analysis on the Austin factors are light, and as you noted, the judge clearly put her decision up front and said, I'm going to revoke probation, and then went through the factors afterwards. To the extent that those findings are incomplete, the remedy here would be a remand back to the district court to address those factors. And to give analysis and to say whether or not she noted on the record that the fact of driving that she was corrected does not change her decision, but she can give a more analysis to that if the case were to be remanded. I think given what
is I mean, the thing that is troubling to me is that she makes the findings on the third factor based on her mistaken assumption that he was driving. I mean, that's why she says he's a danger to public safety. Yes, and I don't disagree with you. She could have revoked probation for this fifth violation if she made findings that that violation satisfied each of the Austin and Motland factors, but she didn't do that. That last factor is contingent on her assumption that he was driving. Is there something in the transcript that I'm missing here where she's attributing that third factor to just the drinking conduct?
Well, the driving was certainly part of the initial thought, and she said she stood corrected and that her decision did not change. Really, most of the analysis as to that third factor is on page 13 of the transcript. And in there, she notes the various treatment that he's been through. She notes that to not revoke probation would unduly depreciate the seriousness of his violations. And so there was, I believe, more to it than just the driving. And the judge, when the record was corrected, said that she's standing by the decision. All that said, if the court believes that it was based on that mistaken belief and the remainder finding for factor three was not sufficient, the result would be a remand for the court, district court, to reconsider the Austin factors.
Mr. Smith, can I just ask, so if the reason for the revocation was not driving conduct, what was it based on this record? What do you think it was?
At least from what the judge had said on page 13, and you know, it's really pages 3 to 5 and then 12 to 14. It's not a lot of transcript pages here. It seems like it's based on the fact that there have been multiple violations, that he's there in front of the judge on his fifth violation. The most recent one, the fifth one, included 26 missed tests, 9 positive tests, and one test that was positive the day before the hearing where he blew a 0.1. And so it's the repeated violation of the court's orders. And he had been given multiple chances. And had gone through treatment, and the probation officer and in the probation officer's reports notes that he doesn't think he has a problem anymore and has no desire to go through treatment. And this judge said, that's not what these court's orders have said. You are supposed to refrain from drinking. You're not doing so. And so we're revoking probation. Now, I'm not unsympathetic to the fact that the appellant has a serious problem, and I wish him the best, and I wish that he will pursue treatment in prison. It sounds like he's not, but I hope that he does. But ultimately, the judge's decision here was within her discretion. To the extent the court disagrees and believes that driving was a big part of that, the remedy should be a remand. Unless the court has any other questions, I will just rest on the briefs.
Thank you. Anything else from the panel this morning? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. We'll reset the clock for you, counsel. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points. One, the only findings based on the admissions below were these 8 instances of consumption of alcohol during that 1 month period. Counsel continues to point to refer to the other allegations that were made, but there were no findings on those other allegations and no evidence presented on those other allegations. And that's part of the problem. I think that the judge was basing a lot of was basing her decision on facts that were not verified, on facts that were not even alleged. And we continue to hear counsel for the government talking about things that have not been proved. It is clear from the second day that the judge's concern was, in fact, this notion that he had been or was a danger to be drinking and driving. Because when she says she's worried about him going out and killing somebody on the road, that is what she's concerned about. That's what it was based on. It's not supported by anything in the record. It should be reversed.
Mr. Kurtz, Mr. Schmidt is arguing that the appropriate remedy here, if the court is to agree with you that the third Austin factor wasn't satisfied, is a remand to the district court to allow a reanalysis of that third factor. Do you agree with that argument?
Well, I said in my reply brief that I agree with that argument, and I said that based on simple common sense. I think the factor that complicates that, though, and that I did not research, is that Mr. O'Brien's probation has now expired. Normally, if there is a violation that has been noted and a warrant has been issued during the period of the during the actual probationary period, the court still retains jurisdiction to hear it. So the question that I don't have a precise answer for is, does the court continue to retain that jurisdiction when it's been reversed on appeal for such a violation? Is his Mr. O'Brien's probation has now expired, his probationary term. So I apologize. I don't have the exact answer to that question, whether the court still retains jurisdiction.
All right. Anything else from the panel this morning? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted, and we will issue an opinion.